Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Basketball analyst Len Elmore is my special guest on the show, and Len joins us now by telephone from New York City. Len, welcome back to the sunny side of sports.
Thanks, Sonny. My pleasure.
Len, I was taking a peek at your Twitter feed. I see you recently celebrated a birthday. Any special celebrations there?
Not really. I mean, it was almost a dual celebration. The 25th anniversary, I believe, of that Duke-Kentucky game, the infamous game, the Leitner game, if you will. I spent my 40th birthday with Vern Lundquist telecasting that game.
And how long have you been broadcasting college basketball games, Len?
Wow, I would have to say with a five-year hiatus, probably about 28, 29 years.
Well, I guess you might say, Len, it'll be a celebration this coming weekend of college basketball in two states, actually, in the state of Arizona as well as the state of Texas. We'll be focusing on the Arizona games, but let's give the ladies their due, Len. The NCAA women's basketball semifinals are Friday night in Dallas, Texas, and I'll quickly run down the matchups. Top-seeded and undefeated Connecticut will play Mississippi State in one semifinal, and Stanford will take on South Carolina in the other. In Arizona, on Saturday night, we'll have the men's Final Four at University of Phoenix Stadium. Len, the venue, a huge venue. I was checking the capacity. Standing room of 78,000 plus. Have you ever played in a facility that large?
Not that large. I mean, I've played in domes before on the NBA level. The Seattle teams used to play in the King Dome, and the Detroit Pistons played in the, the Silver Dome is what they called it back then, which, you know, seated, I'm sure, 75,000. Never was it full, though, when we played.
What about when you're playing in a facility that large, Len? I've heard that some players need an adjustment period, that depth perception can be a problem.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I remember having to get acclimated, spend more time shooting in those arenas. Now, I saw a recent article that tried to shoot down that allegation, but nevertheless, I as a player – going out there, it's a lot more difficult to adjust when you can see the cavernous stadium behind the baskets. It does affect your depth perception.
Let's take a look at the matchups at University of Phoenix Stadium, Len. In the first semifinal, Gonzaga will play South Carolina, two teams making their debuts in the Final Four. How do you see this game, Len?
Well, I mean, perennially, Gonzaga, because it's a so-called mid-major, has always been the underdog. But, you know, this is one of those times when they, in a huge game situation, they're the favorites. The underdog is South Carolina, who, you know, they sport a bunch of young men, long, lean, athletic, quick, balanced. They have a transcendent player in Sindarius Thornwell, who is averaging almost 22 points a game throughout the tournament. And I think the biggest problem they're going to have, obviously, is the discipline and the good shooting of Gonzaga, as well as the big fella in the middle, Karnowski, who, you know, at 7'2", 7'3", 300 pounds, presents a huge obstacle along with his teammates, Nigel Williams-Goss, who's been tremendous during the tournament as well. I think Gonzaga is probably the most balanced team, as I mentioned, in the tournament. But it'll be interesting. The edge, in my mind, is still Gonzaga because of the man in the middle. But people have counted South Carolina out throughout this tournament, and they're still here. So it'll be interesting.
The man in the middle for Gonzaga, Len, Karnowski, one of five players on Gonzaga from outside the United States. Karnowski is from Poland. And I was checking Gonzaga's roster. The Bulldogs also have players from Canada, Denmark, France, and Japan. Do you see the college game having changed a bit in terms of its global nature? I mean, more international players since when you played at Maryland.
Yeah, absolutely. A greater opportunity presents the influx of players from overseas, not just Europe, but as you mentioned, other continents as well. And you know, basketball just demonstrates it's a global game. It has a global attraction across the board. And I welcome the different styles of play. I mean, you've changed the game. Scouts from overseas have changed the game in many respects, particularly among the big men, who are probably a little more skilled right now, have greater shooting range, have a different approach to the game as opposed to the way American bigs were taught traditionally, with back to the basket, playing inside. I still think there's room for players who can do that, a lot of room, in fact. But nevertheless, the game has definitely changed because of the influx of players from overseas.
Len, what about Karnowski's NBA chances? Do you see him being a top pick in the next NBA draft?
I don't see him as being a top pick. I see him obviously getting an opportunity to play. I think there are a lot of things that he will have to work on. Stamina would be one thing. Only averages about 23 minutes a game for this team. But in that 23 minutes, about 12.6 rebounds. He's more athletic than you would think when you take a look at his size and his ability to run the floor. But, I think mobility down low, I think understanding how to play the game down low as well is going to be something that he's going to have to overcome. But I'm pretty sure somebody's going to take a chance on him, and in some way, shape, or form, they'll be rewarded.
The Gamecocks of South Carolina also feature some international players, Len. They have players from Australia, Canada, Estonia, Gabon, and Senegal. Their power forward, Chris Silva, he's from Gabon. What do you think of him, Len, in terms of this matchup against Gonzaga?
Well, I think Silva's a solid player. I don't think he's got enough weight, if you will, to really sit there and bang with Karnowski. I think that obviously South Carolina is going to devise some ways to try to neutralize Gonzaga's big fella in the middle to give Silva some help. More likely play zone than anything else. But, I think Silva on the offensive end is skilled down low. He's a good role player. The way he's going to have to help defend, and he may be the last line of defense, is to move his feet and utilize some quickness to get around, make it difficult for Karnowski to receive, and his teammates are going to have to make it difficult for anybody to pass it inside, because that is where I think the difference in the game will be.
In the second semifinal, Len, we're going to see a five-time national champion North Carolina take on the Ducks of Oregon. The Ducks in the Final Four for the first time since 1939, when they won the very first NCAA National Championship Tournament. How do you see this matchup, Len?
Well, Carolina obviously is the favorite in this one. And in my mind, because of their depth, particularly along the front line, they've got an outstanding lead guard in Joel Berry III, who shot the ball well, distributed the ball well. And certainly Justin Jackson, the ACC Player of the Year, he's one of those guys that's a matchup problem. Oregon is really playing well without one of their mainstays, Chris Boucher, a three-point shooter, also a shot blocker. That's a rare combination. But as a rim protector, he really buoyed their defense. But, you know, Dane Altman's been able to extend the defense a little bit more, rely on Jordan Bell, his big guy in the middle, to pick up essentially where Boucher would leave off. And Bell is an outstanding defensive player in his own right. The hot player, though, that Carolina's going to have to stop is Tyler Dorsey, a guy who averaged about 10, 12 points a game during the regular season, but averaging 20, 21, 22 points or more in the NCAA tournament in the four games that he's played thus far. So, you know, I think it's going to be Carolina's depth against trying to stop a couple of key guys. I forgot to mention Dylan Brooks for Oregon as well, who's the player of the year in the Pac-12. So Oregon is loaded. They just don't get the recognition that a Carolina would get. That's, to me, it's going to be another close game, and I think it's really going to come down to depth, who can stay out of foul trouble.
For our Voice of America listeners just tuning in, talking with basketball analyst Len Elmore. Len, All-American at the University of Maryland, located just outside of Washington. And then Len went on to a very solid ABA and NBA career. 10 years, right, Len, in the as a professional?
Yes, sir.
Well, I want our VOA listeners to remember last year, Len, the Tar Heels of North Carolina lost the NCAA final in heartbreaking fashion to Villanova. Last second shot by Villanova's Chris Jenkins. How much motivation do you think they have, Len, this time around to lift that trophy?
Oh, I think there's plenty of motivation for them. They have a lot of guys left over from that game who remember the roller coaster of emotion. They go from tying the game from a Marcus Page circus shot from beyond the arc to losing the game when Chris Jenkins, as a trailer, knocked down the jump shot during a tie game at the buzzer. And, you know, I think Roy Williams also remembers you better put a man on the ball in long pass situations like that, not because of throwing a long pass, but you have a guy that stays with the inbounder, and that's who Chris Jenkins was. He had no one on him, inbounded the ball and just kind of sauntered up the court. His teammate found him and he knocked down the shot, and I think those memories are probably stuck in the minds of the Carolina guys, and they're just waiting to maybe get that gorilla off their back.
In terms of NCAA memories, Len, I don't know if the University of Maryland will have real good memories about this year's tournament. They got knocked out in their opening game against Xavier. One of the recent stories out of Maryland, Mello Trimble, their star point guard, has decided to turn professional or at least enter the NBA draft. What do you think of Trimble's decision, Len?
Well, look, I mean, it's hard to tell a junior who, you know, has garnered the accolades that Trimble has over the years not to try it. However, you know, he went out last year, was disappointed in what he was told by the scouts and decided to give it a try here in his junior year. One of the things he'll have to understand is that he'll never be a first-round pick, as good a player as he is, because in many ways he doesn't fit the prototype of a point guard or lead guard in the NBA because of size. He's listed at 6'3". I'm not sure he's that tall. But he's got a lot of other skills that he's worked on. And, you know, I think going into the league, if he gets a chance and maybe he can stick with a team, he's developed enough skill to be able to get through that first contract, because it's the second contract that really pays off if guys are thinking of it from a financial standpoint. And, of course, I've always believed that the longer you can stay and get as many reps as you can get to really polish your skills, the better off you'll be in the league, the more staying power you'll have. And I think that probably would have been the case with Trimble, but, you know, I don't have any real argument with him leaving this year.
Len, looking back when you made the transition from the University of Maryland to the professional ranks, what was the biggest adjustment you had to make?
The biggest adjustment in making that transition has a lot to do with being able to manage your time. I mean, you're practicing a couple, 3-4 hours a day and everything that's included with that. But then the rest of the time is yours. And, you know, what do you do during that space of time? I also believe that off-the-court things, such as financial management, social management, if you will. Those things can become a distraction if you're not disciplined enough to deal with them in a manner where it's not going to affect your game. And finally, it's more difficult when I play than now, but travel can, during the season, can be difficult. We used to fly commercial. So, you know, if you can really think about that, and many times played at least one or two times, four games in 5 days. So the fatigue and the wear and tear on you during those days, it was unbelievable. Today, these guys have an opportunity to travel private planes, private jets immediately after the game. They can get their rest. Now there's a push towards guys getting more sleep, more REM sleep, which means, you know, none of the early shoot-arounds. So, you know, I think from the days that I played until now, a lot has been learned about how to maximize performance. But some of the other attendant problems that I just mentioned prevail. And, you know, guys have to learn and maybe get some help in order to overcome.
Len, I know you have a real love for basketball, this broadcast being heard overseas. Where would you rate college basketball's Final Four, just in terms of an annual sporting event here in the United States? Where do you put it in terms of the sports pantheon in America?
Well, I think it's, you know, among the top five events that people want to attend. You're behind the Super Bowl. You know, you're looking at the World Series, and then, you know, NBA Finals, but that, you know, kind of drags on a little bit. The Final Four is important. I'll tell you what's even more of a kick for fans to attend if they can is to watch on television or to be at an event during the first weekend. The field of 64, that's where the upsets occur, and that's where fans are really engaged. But the Final Four is important. My family, we try to make it an outing as often as we can because we're all immersed in the game of college basketball. And so I would say among the top five events that people would like to attend, I think this is one of them.
Len, I mentioned your Twitter account at the outset. Well, it just so happens the Voice of America's social media reporter, Andrew Palcheski, has walked into the studio, and I think he has a question about some of the social media aspects of the Final Four.
Yeah, Len, thanks very much for joining us. Sure. You talked a little bit ago about some of the changes that have taken place over the years as far as players travel and the timing of when they practice. And one of the biggest changes in recent years has been social media. So I'm curious how you think that's changed the NCAA tournament, not just for the fans who are consuming this, but for the players as well, as they have to deal with that.
Well, I think for the fans, certainly it's given them another mode of access, and that's so important in the world of branding and marketing of the game, to give fans different modes of access to the game, whether it's through teams, through the conferences, through the NCAA itself, or even the individual players. I mean, it's just another viewpoint and another way for fans to participate. I don't know if that's always a good thing, because sometimes fans take the desire to be a part of the game a little too far. But I think that it's good for fans and for players if, in fact, they exercise some judgment and, you know, they're not distracted wholly by the things that are said in return. You know, I think it's a wonderful way to connect with fans. Now, we've seen situations where, you know, players have been hurt by their participation in social media. They've been distracted by it, and in many instances, in some instances, they've gotten in trouble through things that they've stated on Facebook or things that they've tweeted on Twitter. So, you know, it really requires some exercise of judgment. But in no way, shape, or form am I in favor of having institutions kind of put a muzzle on players and not allow them to exercise their freedom of expression and speech by going on Twitter. You've had situations where schools have forbidden players to be there, and I think that's wrong, and hopefully, you know, that's not a trend.
One of the things that I've heard people say is they look back on their childhood and they say, if I had to go through my childhood now or I had to go through my college years now with social media, I wouldn't be able to do it because it's so difficult to manage that. How would you have reacted to that back in the day, dealing with all this social media, all the connection that the players have now?
Well, I tend to agree with those who lamented the fact that social media has become so difficult for student athletes. You know, without any real training and, you know, without any examples of the utilization of discretion, we probably would have had some of the same issues, if not more, because quite honestly, as much as that's going on in society, in the world today, global issues, there are a lot of controversial issues going on back in my day, including continuation of war in Vietnam, more of the civil rights struggles, et cetera. So, you know, I think those direct conflicts and disputes would have been, you know, prime fruit for social media, and who knows how far it would have been taken.
Yeah, we see a lot of that with the activism today that players are jumping in, both on the professional level and on the college level. So from looking at the past, though, I'm going to jump forward and kind of push you to look into the crystal ball. What do you think is going to be, you know, a big trending moment from this Final Four as we approach it this weekend? Do you think there's going to be one team, one player, one instance maybe that could end up trending? Knowing full well that, of course, something probably is going to come out of left field and be trending that we're not even thinking about. But, is, you know, what's kind of catching your eye now you think that people will be talking about on social media?
I think there are a couple of things. You know, one obviously is the whole controversy of pay for play. And now, you know, you have activists, if you will, in my mind, probably wrongheaded in some way, shape, or form. I know they mean well, but activists calling for boycotts of the Final Four, which I don't think would ever happen, simply because when you look at the tournament, you look at the emotion and how much these kids are invested in this game. You know, they're not going to threaten all the work that they put in to get to this point by ultimately boycotting a game, which, quite honestly, has rewarded student-athletes very well, notwithstanding the arguments people make about, you know, balancing the largesse. But, you know, I think that's one area that, you know, might get a lot of talk and discussion. And the other is not necessarily with players, but I think from a media standpoint, experimentation with things like virtual reality, where I think a number of the makers of those applications, as well as the accessories that go with them, are now contemplating, you know, giving people access through virtual reality, watching the games through the virtual reality goggles, which again, you know, puts the fan, you know, as close to the game as you can possibly get. So, you know, I think a couple of those things might be something to look for.
Len, on a lighter note, do you think Karnowski's beard might be trending in Arizona this weekend?
Hey, Arizona is about 80 degrees out there. The beard can get pretty hot. I'm not sure if beards are still in vogue right now. I mean, they've been for a couple of years, but you know how quickly those things fade out. But, you know, he's growing a pretty good one, no question about it. There are a lot of schools where you wouldn't be allowed to wear one while playing. Gonzaga obviously is a little more liberal in allowing their guys to appear the way they'd like. But, you know, who knows? I tell you what, he'll be the only one with a beard that long.
Finally, Len, if I could put you on the spot, who do you like to win that trophy on Monday night, April 3rd in Arizona?
You know, I guess if I had to make a choice, it would probably be North Carolina, but that's probably the hex on the Tar Heels. I mean, I'd like to see a team like a Gonzaga win it simply because, you know, it would underscore the parity in college basketball where a school, you know, with an enrollment of their size can still compete, you know, with the larger schools.
Well, Len, I want to thank you very much for talking with us on the Sunny Side of Sports. Len Elmore.
Thanks for having me, Sonny.
Thank you, Len. And that wraps up the March, what's today?
March 30th
edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Len Elmore. Thanks also to VOA's Andrew Palcheski. Want to also thank my producer this evening, Bill Werkinger, and VOA engineer Zenab Abdul-Rahman. Thank you, Zenab. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In his address to the recent Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson delineated the coalition's military successes against the Islamic State, including killing tens of thousands of ISIS fighters and liberating 62% of ISIS-occupied land in Iraq and 30% in Syria. He praised the efforts of coalition partners on the ground, including Turkish forces, for pushing ISIS off the Turkey-Syria border, the Libyan government-aligned fighters for routing ISIS in Sirte, the Iraqi security forces, who, with the cooperation of the Kurdish Peshmerga, are retaking the key ISIS stronghold of Mosul. He spoke of the courage of Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi, noting the commitment he has shown to ensure that people are cared for after the battles, and hailing the unprecedented cooperation between the central government in Baghdad and the Kurdistan regional government as a key reason for the progress seen against ISIS. Soon, Secretary Tillerson noted, the coalition's efforts will enter a new phase, defined by transition from major military operations to stabilization. In this transition, the coalition will continue to clear landmines and return water and electricity, the basic elements that permit people to return to their homes. He added that the coalition will pursue regional diplomatic solutions for the underlying political and sectarian disputes that helped ISIS to flourish, and will continue to provide humanitarian assistance to effective communities as necessary. Secretary Tillerson noted that a successful stabilization phase will set the stage for a successful normalization phase, where local leaders and local governments will take on the process of restoring their communities with our support. The development of a rejuvenated civil society in these places will lead to the emergence of stability and peace where there once was chaos and suffering. But, Mr. Tillerson warned, none of this will happen automatically. He asked each country in the coalition to examine how it can best support these vital stabilization efforts and deal the final blow to ISIS. Finally, Mr. Tillerson emphasized that to stay ahead of a global outbreak of ISIS-related terrorism, the coalition will have to combat the terrorists' perverse ideological message, persist with in-country counterterrorism and law enforcement operations, share intelligence among nations, and break ISIS's ability to spread its message and recruit new followers online. Most of all, said Secretary of State Tillerson, now is the time to strengthen our shared commitment to security and invest in a fight in which we all have a stake.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Take your peek. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Against All Odds, a book written by Cameroonian lawyer Angela Kwemo. It's a practical guide to making the most of your God-given talents and using them to better yourself, your country, Africa, and the human race. That's all on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.